Yeah, hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Deciding to Win podcast. And today we are very honored and privileged to have my friend Chris Tran here joining us from Singapore, I believe. And I've been really looking forward to this conversation for a long time. He is a career coach in the gaming industry, but he has been sharing some very, very, very important insights on LinkedIn and social. And, you know, Chris is a very, very interesting person, and he has a lot of things that will inspire us and will position us in, you know, the right place in to do all in our career and in life in general. So welcome, Chris, to the podcast.
Oh, Brother Reggie, and let me tell you, when you say honored and privileged, I am honored and privileged to be here with the Deciding to Win podcast, and also to be called your friend, bro, right? Like, I think that's a big thing. And can I just start by saying that just the idea of deciding to win is a beautiful idea, because it's kind of a mental construct, like, that we get to choose what victory looks like, and we get to chase it. And with not just my clients and the colleagues and my own personal experience, but when we decide how we win, that kind of informs the strategy with how we play the game. And I think when we can recontextualize a lot of the stuff we do for our careers and move it from being survival to a game, then we can also move the way we think about it from being scarce to being abundant. And that's where all the joy is, man. So again, honored and privileged to be here with you, my friend.
Well, that's great. First of all, can you just tell our audience a little bit more about yourself?
I pause because I have a bad habit of talking too much about myself. So I'm going to try to edit it for to be useful. Okay. I am the child of Vietnamese refugees. So I was born in America, but my parents came to America. Like, they literally escaped when soldiers went into one part of Saigon, and then they jumped out the other, and they were at sea for 3 weeks without anything, and then were picked up by the Navy and lived in refugee camps for a while. When my father passed away, he still didn't speak English. So, and when you don't have a lot, you learn to appreciate a little. Every small thing I learned to appreciate, and that became a strength. And so my journey has been about not being sad about what little I have, but being very happy with what little I have and going crazy with what small advantages I have, right? Because I have seen that there are just a lot of people that just don't appreciate what they have. And I'll be clear, right? Like, I did not buy textbooks for 2 out of the 4 years I was at school. I practically lived in the library. The school I went to, the companies that I wanted to join after college didn't want to hire people from my school. So what did I do? I snuck into those schools and pretended like I was one of their students, so that those, and then got my application in there with them. And then they hired me after, and then they realized I went to the wrong school. Right. I have always put myself in situations where I don't have a lot of advantage, but still put a lot of effort, because I think that even if I am not talented, I can outwork and out effort other people. So my journey has been from upstate New York to Boston to Philadelphia to Switzerland to London. I have worked for the United States Air Force building something called the Global Combat Support System. I have run advertising agencies in Vietnam. I have been a farmer in Japan. I have my career has been one of just maximizing opportunities all the way up until 2015, when I had my own advertising agency in Vietnam. and I went to Nepal to have a holiday, and I was also kind of burnt out on my career. And there was an earthquake, and 9,000 people died, and I was not one of those 9,000 people. And I lived on the streets of Kathmandu for 6 days. My family thought I was dead, and you do a lot of thinking about life when people think you're dead. And it's not really melodramatic, but it was kind of a crazy time, right? Yeah. And I hope that people do not have to go through that kind of experience to get kind of the perspective that I was lucky to get. But after that, I got out and realized I did not want to die as an advertising guy. I felt that my life would be more worthwhile if I could find somebody that really resonated with me. And that's what brought me into gaming. But I'll tell you, Reggie, my challenge was that all throughout my career, I was not a gaming guy in the gaming industry. I don't know if our listeners and friends, if you guys are like Fortnite players or Super Mario Brothers players or what other video games you enjoy out there. The company that creates League of Legends, Riot Games, was hiring, and I did not have, and like it was at the time and still is one of the biggest video game companies in the world. But I didn't have I did not look like somebody qualified, not even a little bit. So I put the work in to make myself look like a video game professional. How? I hired consultants to teach me about the video game industry. I hired a PR agency to give me hostile interview questioning to just almost interrogate me to make me really, really robust. I hired a resume consultant to not just change the words, but change the layout and change the colors and change the font of my resume to look like it belonged there, right? Heck, I even almost, I hired a video game coach to teach me how to play video games better in case they said, hey, we don't believe you. How good are you playing at video games? And Reggie, I'm not proud, but I'm honest. And I said, I almost hired a dating coach to help me kind of be charming during the interview. Like, imagine how crazy that is, right? But in a way, it's not that crazy if you really want something. And so that's how I got into video games. I had a great career with Riot. I became head of Southeast Asia for a period of time, launched some of the biggest esports, launched Valorant, launched a TV show. And now I get to help people chase fulfillment as I was lucky enough to experience myself. So I hope I said enough and not too much.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot in there to unpack, looking at all the things that, you know, you've been and the places that you have been. Just a minute. Sorry, you know, because I'm in the military, there's a siren that goes off at certain times. I didn't want to come into the audio, but I think hearing from you speak, so advertising is like the main area or the main, you know, skill that you built in your career. Am I right?
No, no, bro. I started as a consultant with Deloitte. And that's what took me to Philadelphia, and New York, Switzerland, London, and Alabama. And then I pivoted to advertising. But in between those two, I was English teacher, farmer, travel guy. I exported paintings on eBay. I'm lucky in that I was able to try and fail a lot and fail until I found something that I could do and not fail. That makes sense, right?
Yeah, it does. How much did the training or your background as being, you know, Vietnamese refugees in New York, how much did it build, you know, what mindset did that build into you, you know, in your career, when you started, let's say when you started out as a consultant at Deloitte, how did that affect your motivations? Did it make you want it more what was that, you know, how did that position, you know, affect your or you know, be a factor in your in your career choices and your career journey?
Let me try to answer and you tell me if I hit the mark. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you don't have money as a kid,
yeah,
you end up with really ugly clothes. Really yes. ugly clothes, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so in high school, when like I kind of just surrendered and just figured that the only thing that people would ever pay attention to me was school, because I didn't look like the other kids in America, right? Yeah. And I was, and it's funny, I actually looked older in high school than I do now. It was very strange, because I was overweight, low self-esteem, nobody wanted to talk to me, but I figured if there was one thing that didn't, or money didn't matter, and it's just I could study. And that attitude carried me into my professional career, right? Where at Deloitte, I was also the worst dressed consultant, right? And like somehow in my head, I had already embraced the value system that what I wore didn't matter, right? Like clothes that were either too bright or didn't match, the wrong shoes, you know, because you can imagine Deloitte, it's a flashy company.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a flashy company and everybody's like, hey, check out my watch. Hey, check out my new briefcase. And I'm like, I'm using the laptop case that came with my laptop. For example, right? And it didn't matter to me because I believe that what mattered and what continues to matter is how effective I am. And if I'm not effective, then I best bust my ass to learn how to be effective, right? Because none of that other stuff really matters, right? Especially at the opening, like the beginning times of my career. I think as my career kind of matured, my own presence and how I am perceived from far away became more important. But most people don't need to hear that right now. Yeah. Right? If you guys are ready to be like executives or senior managers at a multinational, then I'm happy to talk to you about my observations there. But I think the useful lesson here is hard work is always rewarded. And if you don't know, believe that you can learn. Right? I don't believe that there's something called talent.
Okay, interesting. But what got you into consulting in the first place? I because, you know, I think now you're a career coach. What was the main point? Because it's like,
I have a terrible reason, bro. I have a terrible reason. My parents were old country people, right?
Yeah.
You know, and old country people, they're like, oh, what does an old country person want their kid to be? A doctor.
Yes.
Because they think doctors make a lot of money.
Money, yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, made it through halfway through my university degree, chasing that doctor. And that piece of paper that would help me be a doctor, not even make me be a doctor, right?
Yeah.
And I realized, dude, I just didn't care enough about other people's pain. I was just like, the other people's pain was just kind of annoying to me, an inconvenience. And so I was stuck halfway through my schooling, and I'm like, what the heck am I going to do? And I'm like, all I know is that I want to be a doctor because my parents know that that will make me money. And so what's something that I can get to that will make me the most money? And consulting was the most approachable thing for me. Right. And so I kind of just took a left turn, and instead of trying to be a doctor, I was just like, how do I be a consultant? And this is like, put all my effort into that thing. And so I changed or added a degree to my study. I was studying biology up until that point. Then I added an economics degree. Yeah. I did 2 or 3 internships in, different companies, mainly in like stock brokerages back when this was 1995. Mm. Just to give you an idea of how long ago, it was almost 30 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So there was no such thing as internet anything in 1990.
Yeah.
And then I was able to get a part-time job at an internet service provider, one of the first companies that was providing internet service to people in the Boston area. And so between changing my degree, getting a lot of internships, which I was not qualified for, and getting a job at an internet service provider, which I also was not qualified for, it gave me enough of a story to go and sneak into schools that were not that were hiring consultants, because my school is not a consultant school, to fake my way in. Man, I think about it. I'm like, how the heck did I get this life, bro? How the heck?
But how was it for you? I mean, working as a consultant, you know, going up, maybe seeing senior partners that you admire, want to be like, you know, that whole corporate, you know, environment. How were you able to navigate that? And number one, did it meet your expectations? You know, joining or you know, being a consultant? Because I mean, listening to you, it took you places around the world.
I think the most exciting part about consulting is taking the places around the world. Right? When you are young, consulting's conceit, or what consulting tells you, is that you get to try a lot of different industries and get that exposure and become a generalist. Absolutely true. But as a generalist, especially when you are young, you actually don't have enough exposure to get deep wisdom from it, which is kind of what makes you valuable as a consultant. And so the worldly experience I got was great. The industry experience that I would say is kind of, it's enough to like shift your mindset to like where you want to go deeper, but it's really hard to make a career. And with regards to navigating within the organization, they are very clearly defined layers between, you know, like analyst to manager to director to partner. And so if you were playing, and that was like the highest I made it, there was senior consultant, which isn't bad, but that's just how far I made it before I decided to go have adventures elsewhere. And you find that you have to champion yourself and the work you do. Because if you depend on other people to champion you, you are setting yourself up for disappointment. Right? And I would say that in an early person in their consulting career or any career, one of the things that they should align with their manager is, how do I document what I do? What does success look like? And what do I need to achieve to make it to the next level? Many, many of us struggle to have those conversations. Why? We are taught that if we ask for something for ourselves, we're being selfish, that we're being hasty. But if we do that, then a year, 2 years down the line, the people who will move in front of us will be those people who ask those questions. Right? Because they weren't told that. They were told something else. We need to understand that when we talk about our achievements, it's not selfish. It's not being arrogant or vain. It's not bragging. It's just owning our achievements. Because if we did it, it's not bragging. And we just need to be very clear on that. When we're starting our careers, when we're in the middle of our careers, when we're in consulting, or in a lot of other things. And I almost want to go back to the idea of deciding to win, right? Because you got to define how you win. What's your victory conditions? And then you can build a strategy around achieving that. And sometimes I've been able to do that proactively and think about, okay, these fools hired me. Okay, now how am I supposed to like figure out to deliver the work, right? And other times I get really kind of complacent and like whenever I'm complacent, I get hurt. I get hurt real bad and I don't do well. And when I'm like really aggressive and humble, right? Aggressive in that I want to do stuff, humble in that I am clearly, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, which leads me to the path of curiosity and asking questions, asking for help and asking for feedback and not feeling bad when I get negative feedback. Like that kind of resilience, man, that is more valuable than gold.
Yeah. Chris, I mean, talking about that, when is the right time to have that conversation? Is it when you're yearly, for my organization, you're assessed yearly? Do you have to wait for that? Do you have to check in with your bosses? When do you do? Is it after you've done some great work that you think that you deserve recognition, or how do you keep your managers? You know, how do you set up yourself to have those, conversations, and even how do you show your work in an organization?
That is a great question, right? And I have a couple ideas to kind of for people to think about, right? If you're doing good work, it doesn't happen once a year.
Right? Yeah, okay.
Hopefully you're doing memorable work like once a month or something like that.
Yeah.
But that's one idea. The following idea is the closer you can talk about the work to when it's accomplished, the stronger the impression you will leave with your boss.
Right? Okay.
So if you wait until what you feel is more opportune for your manager, what you're actually doing is like diluting the impact of your good work, right? And you're hurting your manager because they are unable to have an accurate assessment of how well you do stuff because it's not fresh, it's old, right? And yeah. So a useful way to think about it is when you wait, you're actually making it harder for your manager to have an accurate assessment of your ability, right?
Yeah.
You may think you're doing them a favor by waiting for the performance review time or the end of the year or their birthday or the next month, right? Like these are all kind of arbitrary dates. But I want everybody to think about talking about, like, maybe not talking about their next raise or promotion, but talking about like the impact that they're having when that impact happens, right? Now, with regards to when do you have a, hey boss, I would like to move forward, what's that look like kind of conversation, right?
Yeah.
As soon as possible.
Okay.
As soon as possible, because that will give you more time to action against it, right?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. If you wait, honestly, if you wait until annual performance review, I kind of think it's the worst time. Because your boss is going to be having similar conversations with all of your colleagues and thinking about his or her own promotion prospects. So your place in like the prioritization queue, odds are you like there's a high chance you may get lost in the crowd.
Yeah.
Right? And you're a unique person, bro. No, you should never ever let yourself be treated as a commodity. Right? And so
Right.
If you wait for the time that everybody else is doing it. Right? Not great.
So how do you separate, what's the line between being overly ambitious? Because you know, sometimes when you start working, you are there with a team, you are there with other, you know, coworkers. When does it look like you're being selfish and this guy is always lobbying? I think there's a term they use too much. This guy always lobbies, you know.
great question.
Yeah.
But you know what? How do you
deal with that? Yeah.
People have this fear about being that guy because you come off as a jerk and like arrogant and hell, right?
Yeah.
I have never met that guy. Everybody has that fear, but nobody ever, ever becomes that. Right?
Yeah.
And I think we are almost overcorrecting to the other side and we're all playing small right? And so I would actually challenge you, Reggie, and say, oh, don't worry about it. Trust yourself, right? Trust that you won't be, because I'm going to assume that everybody listening to college doesn't talk about their accomplishments enough.
Yeah.
And then someone say, oh, well, I'm not going to talk about my accomplishments because I'm going to worry about being the guy that talks about it too much.
Yeah.
Let's go for step one and not worry about step a million yet. I see you smiling. Why are you smiling, bro?
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm just thinking about it because, you know, a lot of times when you start and let's say when organizations hire, they have all of you join at entry level and maybe are like 15 or 10 in that organization. And it's like, you know, everybody is trying to find us or her feet and this kind of level and someone becomes a favorite. And some people would rather, you know, rather than doing that, they don't want to become the person that's most talked about and being seen as arrogant. And that sort of stops them from sometimes even taking credit for their work or even saying right. that. And the hope is that let me be noticed, let me be discovered, rather than putting myself, you know, in the shop window. So you know, that happens a lot, especially from where I'm coming from. You know,
and like I think you might say, "Oh, I am being authentic, Reggie.
Yeah,
I don't have to market myself."
Yeah,
right. Like, and then it becomes a weird kind of valuation, or like a. If my manager was good, they would be able to see past the fakeness of this other person and see my authentic awesomeness.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And then it can also become a, like we say we're being humble because we're not humble. Showing off.
Yeah.
But there's also like a weird sense of pride in saying I'm too good to play the game.
Okay.
Right? But net, all this mindset stuff, it just really means that you should be okay with not being successful, right? If you don't want to play the game, you will not win.
Yeah.
And that in itself is a decision.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you say, oh, I don't want to put myself in the store window, right?
Yeah.
Who's going to buy you? Who's going to buy you? Right? Do you want to, right? Who are you going to complain to for not being bought? And gosh, that is a very sensitive kind of metaphor. I'm going to walk my way back from that, right? But at the end, but like, if we do not take action and try to find our own success and leave it to somebody else to decide, then we have no one else to blame.
Yeah.
And that's being responsible for both our actions and our inaction. Right?
Yeah.
If you do not take action and you do not succeed, you have no one else to blame but yourself because you decided not to take action.
Wow. Now, Chris, let's, you know, can you just give us your opinion about career planning? You know, because I know you're in a career coach. What is your, you know, principle about that? You know, planning your career, especially now it's a new year. There's a lot of emerging technology coming in, AI and machine learning. And all that, you know, kind of thing. So what are some of the things that you feel should be the best way one can plan, you know, his career?
Gosh, man, you asked me a giant question and you smile and ask, expecting me to give you a simple answer, right?
Yeah. Like, make it simple.
can I say pass?
Okay.
No, I think there are three things for you to think about, right?
Yeah.
One is you got to make enough money to meet the bills. If you cannot, then nothing else matters. And I'm tired of these gurus out there saying, you know, chase your dreams. If you have like the motivation, then the money will come. I'm like, no, I live in a world where 1 + 1 = 2, and sometimes you gotta just do the work, right?
Yeah.
And I don't talk about how I was an English teacher that nobody wanted to hire, or the fact that I used to work at a Burger King, right, in a Chinese restaurant, all that stuff, right? Like, nobody wants to hear about that, but I've had to do it. One, make sure that you can take care of your minimum, right? But yeah. Then once you have that, then there are two things that I think you got to consider. One is, what is a career that has a skill you enjoy developing? Because okay. I like to think about it as like a keystone career, a keystone skill, right?
Yeah.
Like if you enjoy, like a musician is great. If you enjoy not even playing music, but practicing music. If you love practicing music, then you will eventually become a decent musician, right? Yeah. Because that skill will continue to get better. And yeah. You see that in a lot of different things, from data analysis, programming, right? Some of the best engineers just continue to love developing their engineering skill. And in so doing, they become more valuable. And like their career just progresses as a function of their increased mastery of their keystone skill. Right? So find a keystone skill you love developing. The second thing with regards to AI is learn how to use AI religiously. Like maybe that might mean trying to use AI to do your job before you do anything else. Do not replace yourself with AI.
Yeah.
But the idea here is, how do you learn how to use AI as what they call a co-pilot, right?
Yeah.
So that instead of, like, how much more effective is Reggie with an AI? Is it a 20% increase in productivity? A 50%? Is it like, or is it like Reggie equals 2 Reggies and a Chris all together because of the power? Because I believe in the future, your ability to marshal and leverage the power of AI to do work will be a key consideration of either how quickly you can get a job or how quickly you climb within an organization, right? The technology is there, it's powerful, and it can help any sort of knowledge work.
Wow, that's great. Now, Chris, what's your opinion about work ethic? Because I think that, you know, listening to you, you really, really had, I see you as someone who has really, really awesome and still really, really puts in the work. So sometimes how important is that factor in having a successful, you know, career?
I mean, like I said, you got to find work that where you develop the skill you enjoy. Not application, developing the skill.
Yeah.
Because when you're always sharpening the saw, you can always build great, amazing things.
Yeah.
I don't think of myself as a workaholic, but I know what my wife thinks of me. Right? But fact of the matter is, I believe people are happiest when they get to do good work.
Yeah.
Right? And when you're doing work that makes you miserable, then that is your like mind, heart, body, soul telling you that maybe you should like think about learning a different skill, right? Because if you can find the right thing, then the work will always feel like work. I don't want to be one of those guys that says, "Oh, find something you love and you'll never work a day." Mm-hmm. Work is work. You got to do hard things because hard things are valuable things, and people will pay you to do valuable things. People are not going to pay you to do things that aren't valuable, right? That's just the way it is. So, but you've got to, like, there are some hard things that you just enjoy, right? Like in gaming, as an example, like crossword puzzles are really hard to me, right? But, you know, stuff like that. Like, I enjoy coaching people. Back when I was in video games, I actually enjoyed like spreadsheets and business modeling and investing in projects and people and trying to like do audacious event management, because sometimes you're just managing so much chaos that it's terrifying. And I loved all of it. And I was creating a lot of value because I was put in places where maybe I wasn't the best person to do it, but I was the only person they had to do it. Yeah. Right? But doing hard things that you enjoy practicing, or you appreciate what they transform you into, is kind of key to being, to looking at not just a career as a game, but also a career as a marathon. Right?
Yeah.
You gotta be constantly moving.
Yeah. Chris, how did you always get the courage to change from one career or to move into one different industry or the other? What was your real motivation, and how can someone, I wouldn't use the word master, but what are some of the guiding principles that can help you, you know, navigate that?
Motivation is a big word.
Yeah.
I'm sometimes not sure if motivation is accurate. I mean, I went to consulting because I thought it would make the most money, right?
Yeah.
I stopped consulting when my dad passed away. And then I just needed to do something else, right? I got into advertising because I was tired of being in travel. And I got into gaming because maybe that is the key place where motivation really played a part, right? And like so much so that I just had to transform myself from being a caterpillar into a worm, into a moth, into a butterfly. Butterfly. Caterpillar into butterfly.
Yeah.
Yes, I have a biology degree. Yeah. No, I was not a good biology student.
Yeah.
My advice to people is like motivate. Like if I was gonna like map my path, it's find something that you can do that will make money first. And it's okay. Not very romantic. It's not the most romantic thing, right?
Yeah.
The second thing is, once you have that stable foundation, find out what kind of work really makes you happy to do. Not easy, but happy. And when something is hard, that you are excited about it being hard. Right?
Yeah.
And the motivation there will be excellence in skill or demonstration of mastery. Or the value you create, because when you're good at something, you're creating value, and the people around you will see it and appreciate it, right? That's my motivation. And it's a very kind of capitalist motivation. How are you motivated, bro? Oh, yeah, create value. And people will reward you for creating value.
Yeah.
And then you go create more value, right?
Yeah.
But, That is what work, honest, pure, well-intentioned work is for me. Because, you know, I don't, it's funny, having come from the video game industry, I'm not going to say playing video games is work, right? Because it's not valuable. Nobody would pay you for it, right? So difficult, so you got to find hard things that you love.
Yeah, and I agree, this is, talk a little bit more about leadership, because one of the things that I also find in career is that you can do very well at your skill, but then the time comes for you to take more responsibilities, take more, you know, become a leader. And sometimes you are ready. Sometimes you have the technical skill, but maybe not so much on what they call the soft skills. And it's also a key component in your career growth. So how do you go into that, and what are some of the tips that can help you excel when you are moving into leadership, or even as a leader, but you are moving higher and taking more responsibilities? How can you maintain, you know, and still operate at that same level without, you know, destroying yourself?
So we had a slight breakdown in communications. Like there was a break in due to internet stuff, but I think you were asking me, when you get promoted to be a leader,
yes,
you weren't already a leader. You were an individual contributor, and suddenly they're like, oh yeah, you're a manager. Yeah. And so the struggle is that you don't get to do anymore what you're good at, which is being an individual contributor, right? Yeah. And now you have to start from zero from this thing that is unrelated to what got you there, right? It's one of those, like, what got you here won't get you there kind of situations. And like, if you think about it, it's stupid. It's stupid where you give somebody more responsibility than they ever had, but like using a skill that they've never even understood the philosophical underpinnings of, let alone have any practical experience. And that was much the same. And I will tell you, at the beginning, I was a terrible manager and leader, right? Because everybody assumed that I would be it because I just was so good at a skill that suddenly, oh, I'm supposed to be a manager. Terrible. Absolutely terrible. And so what I did was, and this is a strong recommendation for a different podcast.
Yeah.
The podcast is, and like, this is what I recommend to everybody, right? The podcast is called Manager Tools. Okay.
Yeah.
And they have these three podcast specific episodes about what they call the Holy Trinity, right? The Holy Trinity for beginning managers. If you can manage these three skills, how to have one-on-ones, how to provide feedback, and how to delegate work.
Yeah.
And these are three skills that everybody thinks that they know how to give feedback, and they know how to have one-on-ones, and they know how to delegate. And I'm telling you, 25 years into my career, I still don't know how. I don't think I've mastered these things yet, right? But the fundamentals, I was like, how you think about this stuff and how you practice it and the impact of doing it well and the impact of doing it poorly are things that you need to understand. Because if I drop somebody and said, hey, this 5-person team, you have to manage them and give them no guidance, it's a recipe for disaster, right?
Yeah.
But if I just say, hey, do one-on-ones with everybody for the next 2 months, and then come back and tell me what you think your job is. That is the beginning of wisdom. That is the beginning of the skill set a manager needs to develop in order to be an effective leader, right? And like, ultimately, that is, a good leader spends a lot of time listening before they start leading.
Yeah.
But manager tools, man, it's free, been around forever. you know, like, there is no referral link. Do not like slam that like button. Just go, bro.
Yeah, I will. I will. Thanks. Thank you for that feedback. What we are seeing now, I think, after COVID is we're having a lot of layoffs all over the world in, you know, different industries. It's like the whole, I've not been around for too long, but it's like the whole job thing has really changed, because my dad worked for a company for 25 years. You know, I think his generation people were doing those kind of reps, but now it's like things are changing. Even organizations that people have been very dedicated and loyal to, all of a sudden they are laid off and all that. So how should you, as a professional or, you know, career minded person, how should you prepare for these things? And how do you, you know, what should be your mindset in this kind of thing? I mean, people even suggest that you just, everywhere you are, just coast, do your bare minimum. Just do what you are told to do. And, you know, so it's a whole lot, especially on social media, when you go through these kind of, you know, career advisors and coaches and all the things, people who, you know, put some of those things. So what do you have to say about that?
I sense so much anxiety in this question, right? And I just want to, there are a couple of things that are useful and a couple of things that I want to just reject the premise, right?
Okay.
Employment and labor is cyclical. There are just going to be times it's high and there's low, right?
Yeah.
And we live in a time when media is moving faster than ever, and when there's nothing to talk about, people like talking about bad news. Right. That being said, we are also in, you know, like, it's been maybe a year and a half where we see a lot of layoffs across town, right? And there are some good reasons for that. Like, people hired a lot of people, like, they hired a lot during COVID, right?
Yeah.
Which is a cyclical thing. Now, what is useful is to understand that I think there are fundamental changes in the relationship between the employer and the employee.
Yeah.
And there are ideas that it's easier to hire from outside than to promote somebody.
Right? Yeah.
Or average tenure in our parents' day and age was double digits. And now, like, I'll be honest, the longest job I've ever had was for 6 years. And for probably that is long compared to other people, which is probably like 2 or 3 years, right?
Yeah.
And so the idea is not to half-ass your way and coast in a job. Yeah. Because that only guarantees that you will have to go find a new job soon, right? It is, how do you always portray that you are creating a lot of value so that when you need to find a job, you can find a job easily, right? And it goes back to the idea of, like, how do you promote yourself? How are you a showman? Even if you are like that showmanship, like people say personal brand, and I hate it because personal brand implies that your career is a shallow thing.
Yeah.
But if you can use the internet to demonstrate that your mastery is deep by showcasing a body of work that is varied and powerful and impactful and valuable. I think I said valuable twice, but you know what I mean, right?
Like, yeah.
Then that is what will make your career resilient at a time, at a cyclical time, at a time when the employer-employee relationship is being renegotiated. But if you think you will be laid off so you coast, you definitely will be laid off because you're coasting. It is a self-fulfilling process, right?
Yeah.
And if you work hard and hoping that you won't be laid off, even if you're laid off, you will get a job faster.
Yeah.
Right? And so, as I said before, hard work is rewarded. Right?
Well, great. The amazing work you did with Riot Games in Southeast Asia, particularly with, you know, Vietnam, what was your... the top three things and lessons that you learned from that experience? Because I mean, you were people didn't really see a lot to come. You know, it's like, what good thing can come from there in esports? And you were able to turn it around. So, what are some of the you know, looking back at that, what are some of the things that you did right then that contributed to that success?
I think I'm going to give one lesson with a couple examples, because I feel like I've given a lot of lessons but not a lot of examples, right?
Yeah.
It's easier for people to tell you that you can't do something than to actually believe, because if they believe in that you can do something, then they kind of have to help you, right?
Yeah.
Like, Reggie, if it's like, oh yeah, you want to do something? Oh, I don't think it's a good idea. Then you can't ask for me for advice, because I told you it's a bad idea. You can't ask me for help. You're not going to be like, okay, Chris, I'm going to do it anyway. Can you give me $10? No. Right? Yeah. And imagine nobody wanted to give me $10 for Vietnam.
Yeah. Right?
So you can't host an international event. You can't have a national esport. You cannot sell a sponsorship. It's better for people to say no. But for me, like they say, pessimists are more often right, but optimists have more fun, right? And so they told me, they said, we don't have the equipment and technology in Vietnam to have an esports event. And this is 2017. This is what, 7 years ago. And you know what I did? I rented out 3 floors in a 4-star hotel. It was a Novotel. Or a Pullman. I forget, a Novotel or a Pullman, one of those things, right? And rented out 3 floors and a ballroom, and then we re-engineered like gaming studios and a broadcast center, and we took like pipe and curtains and made a server room, etc. And we almost overloaded the electrical grid for the hotel, because we needed to just like make a show happen in a country where nobody said that we could support the tech. And I don't know how you guys feel when somebody tells you that you aren't advanced enough to do something, but it made me angry. It made me pretty angry, right? And gosh, there were times when we almost failed, but we didn't, right?
Yeah.
And then later on, they said, oh, you go ahead and try to build an esports stadium, but like we don't have the budget for you. And they gave me not a lot of budget. And so we went out and found the cheapest technology vendors in the world to build it. And then they're like, and then like, imagine asking people who have much better budgets in like much more advanced countries saying, hey, does this work? And they're like, it works on paper, but I wouldn't do it. And I'm like, yeah, but what kind of jerk? Because you have money and I don't. And I'm going to fucking go. I mean, I swear, I'm going to hecking go for it anyway. Yeah. Right? I mean, you can imagine like, we had in-studio comms that were refurbished iPods. We had gotten a line on like old iPods, not iPhones.
Yeah,
iPods. When was the last time you saw an iPod, bro? Right?
We had a long time ago.
Right? We had like 10 iPods that we were like using for in-house communications. Right? We were like calling up different offices around the world, saying, "Hey, do you have any network switches?" And they're like, "Let me see." And they're like, "Oh, I have this box on the server floor. I don't know what's in it." And they open up, "Oh," like, and they're like, "We'll send them to you." Right? Like, I was literally begging from different offices for whatever that they were throwing out, because what they didn't want was gold to me and allowed me to prove that I could make something amazing in a place that was very, I was very passionate about. Right? So when people tell you that it's not a good idea, really interrogate that, because it may be their way of saying, I don't want to help you.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Right? True. And yeah, I will also say that I do have a reputation for being very bold. I think that may have come out a little bit in this interview.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, right. Very upfront, yeah. Yeah, I mean, so
I'm an old man, Reggie. I'm an old man. Yeah. Don't got many years left.
Yeah. So, how has your coaching, career coaching going? You know, how are people, you know, how's it going? How are people implementing some of the coaching, and what are some of the results coming up, and what are some of the feedback that you are getting?
I mean, I'm lucky. I help people like get promotions, get raises faster and more than they ever thought. Right? I help people get out of their way. I help people switch from like to get into the gaming industry, or in the gaming industry, you move from one thing to another. Right?
Yeah.
And these are all things, they come to me because these are hard things that they cannot imagine they could do. But yeah. I think coaching is in a place where people don't accept it a lot.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. Reggie, you are in the military, so I assume that you're in good fitness, right?
Yeah.
But if you want to like train for the national football team, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you have a coach?
Of course. Yeah, I would. Even right. In the military, we have coaches. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we have a scout. Yeah.
Coaches. Because when you want to perform, you get a coach.
Yeah, you get a coach. Yeah.
Right. And so many people pay for personal trainers and coaches when they want to lose weight or run a marathon, et cetera. And most of the people, honestly, no shame, aren't really good at following through.
Yeah.
But also, personal training and like fitness coaches are a thing of vanity. You just want to look better. And sure, there's help, but a lot of it's vanity, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
But our careers are so tied to our personal identity and how we feel self-worth. But we do not get coaches. Yeah. We just hope that we do work the way we are expected, and we hope that we will be noticed.
Yeah.
And it gets really lonely. And we need somebody to like either be their cheerleader or their emotional dumping ground or their wise friend or all of that, right? To support us so that we can grow in our career, which is a massive part about how we experience life. And so that's why I do it, because I wish I had a coach. Life would have been much easier for me. I think I would have failed less, or I would have maybe failed in more interesting ways, which would have also been cool.
Well, that's great. You know, we are about hitting the top of the hour. You know, before we go, what are some of the key messages that you really, really want to pass on to the young generation and young professionals, and you know, that you always keep on repeating?
I'm trying to like distill this into something simple, right?
Yeah.
It's really hard to be the best in the world at something.
Yeah.
Right. But you can put the most effort in the world against something.
Yeah.
And so my advice is, if you care about developing a skill, be prolific.
Okay.
Create a lot of tangible assets around the skill that you want to build, and yeah, put it into the public arena so that people can see it, challenge it, give you feedback, because each one of those things will increase your confidence, build your portfolio, and establish your network. Because in the future, I think if you have a skill, a portfolio, and a network, your career is very safe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You mentioned three things there. It's a skill, portfolio, and a network. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Yeah.
Right. Like, just think about like what brought us together, bro.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Skill, portfolio, and a network. Yeah. That is great. That's great. So Chris, what should we expect from you this year, 2024?
I mean, God, I don't want to say it, but I gotta say it. I'm working on a book.
Okay.
All right. I don't know if it'll be done this year, but I'm working on a book. So, yeah, I'm coaching more. You know, that's when you're focused, there's not a lot to say.
Yeah.
Right. But when somebody asks you that, it kind of feels awkward by not having a lot to say. But I'm just going to challenge you and say, I'm heads down on coaching and writing a book, bro.
Wow, right? That's great.
And that's good.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So, Chris, where can our listeners find you? Where can we find you online?
Find me on LinkedIn.
I
guess I'm Chris L. Tran on LinkedIn. Please interact with me if you have questions. The best way for me to get an answer from me is to comment on my content, because my inbox is overflowing, and it's just it's hard. But I hope that everybody who comes to my content finds something valuable and actionable that will empower them to take control over their career and figure out how to win and have the faith to execute on that victory plan.
Wow. Yeah, fine, Chris. I always look out for his posts. He's really, really saying a lot of, you know, great things. So he's typing out. And sometimes I feel they are way too short. Maybe he should expand on more. But you always find a lot of engagement also in the comments session, where people also come. And then, yeah, so it's always a great place to learn from him. Yeah.
I crack up because people used to say I talk too much, and I made him shorter. But anyway.
Yeah.
Everybody has an opinion.
yes. All right. Thank you. It's been such an amazing time having you on, and I think we will come back to you whilst we are, because like you said, careers are very, 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 very important. They form a big part of our lives, and they determine a lot, you know. A lot, especially now, you know, these days, in these times. So it's always good to talk about the things that matter. Yeah. So thank you so much, Chris. And yeah, it's a pleasure having you.
Thank you for the time, man.
All right.